I'm Andy Borowitz, sitting in for Leonard Lopate. In his novel Dogfight, A Love Story, Matt Burgess tells the story of a Queens native and drug dealer named Alfredo and the intricate network of lives his small-time dealings affect. The narrative not only shifts between the neurotic and guilt-ridden voice of Alfredo and his family, friends, and enemies, but also embodies the voice of the borough of Queens. The book is published by Doubleday, and I am pleased it brings Matt Burgess to our show today. Welcome, Matt.
Welcome. Very excited to be here.
Matt, are you, you're a Queens native?
Mm-hmm. Born and raised. Yep.
Born and raised. And are you, do you still live in Queens?
I do not.
Oh, Matt.
My street cred just went right out the window.
Oh, yeah. Did you sell out? Where, you
didn't I'm move in Greenwich, Connecticut now, yeah. No, not really, no.
You didn't move to Brooklyn, did you?
No, I did not move to Brooklyn.
Okay.
The last thing I could do.
Okay.
No, I live in Minneapolis now. I started this novel in Jackson Heights, Queens, and based on my buddies and stories that we had lived and told each other, and it was almost impossible to write the book because we were too busy having too much fun.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so I had to...
Well, writers aren't supposed to have fun.
Right, yeah. Well, yeah, I've been
really
told that.
It really interferes with the process.
Right, yeah. And so I had to leave, and so I moved to the middle of the country, and I live in Minneapolis now, and I wrote the book. My discipline, you know, increased tenfold because I missed home so bad. And it was the only way for me to really revisit my friends and hang out with those guys again.
Now, for our online listeners in Minnesota, you didn't just say that there was no fun to be had in Minneapolis, in the middle of the country. It was sort of a grim picture you were painting
there. Minneapolis, I love you. Yeah, but it's also, you know, cold 11 months out of the year, so it's impossible to leave the house, you know.
That's right. Now, the book's great.
You're
28 years old?
28.
That's so annoying.
I would hate myself if I wasn't me.
Yeah, you know? You've written this acclaimed novel, and I wish you were doing something more age appropriate, like playing Xbox.
Right. Yeah.
But
I'm not allowed.
You're not allowed.
Right, yeah.
It's a cliche to say that Queens is this kind of, you know, melting pot of different ethnic groups, but you actually represent kind of an odd ethnic group in Queens.
White people?
I wasn't going to say white people, but you're of Scottish descent, Irish descent?
Irish descent.
Yeah, so that wasn't like, you didn't have like a gang of, you know.
Like the Jets?
You didn't wear tartans or anything like that. They were hanging out on street corners.
Painted our faces blue.
That's right. Yeah. Who were your buddies hang out? What was your group like that you hung out with when you were?
Everybody. Everybody. Uh-huh. Yeah. I have been blessed. I'm very rich in friends in Queens and in Minnesota and everywhere. And just the most diverse group of people, both ethnically and personality-wise, imaginable, you know? Like one of my friends, when I was living in Minnesota, and so I had to call up friends often to say, please go outside your house and tell me what the tallest building is there, you know, to get it right in the book. And so when I came home to visit Queens one time, I drove around with my friend who is a narcotics detective. And we drove around Jackson Heights, where the book takes place, to find the best spot for selling drugs. and like, we're getting out of the car and we're like testing doors and things like that to see, you know, what would be the illest place to be slinging drugs. And he was like, oh, you know, you should also ask this other buddy of ours who used to sell drugs. And I was like, oh, yeah, I should hit him up for some information. And so it's like, you know, both sides of the law. And everyone was more than happy to talk about themselves. And help me.
Now, you chose as your protagonist in this book Alfredo, who's Puerto Rican.
Mm-hmm.
And was there a little bit of a gut check when you sat down to write? And you think, well, I'm this Scottish lad writing about a Puerto Rican guy. Was it just very natural because that was who you knew and that's who you grew up with?
I didn't think of it as a strange thing to do. I was more nervous when I thought about. If the book got published and after it came out, people sort of objecting to that. But when I was writing about it, he was the guy that came to me. And he has the same interior life that I do, which is intensely neurotic and nervous all the time. And so it didn't seem out of play for me to narrate the interior life of someone who was Puerto Rican. I mean, there's plenty of point of view sections of a pregnant woman as well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just... I'm a writer who's interested in sort of writing not so much about or I was going to say not so much about myself, but actually to sort of find the common ground between myself and these characters that I'm depicting.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the novelist's job. I mean, yeah. you're using your empathy.
Right.
Now, you did set yourself a kind of tricky task because the book it takes place over the course of 48 hours. So mm-hmm. you have to keep it interesting and action-packed, but also make sure we know these characters, that the characters reveal themselves in such a brief time. How did you settle on that that structure?
That was an unintentional structure. I was just it might be easier too to set a novel over like a constricted time frame, mm-hmm. you know, because there's that sort of sense of urgency in the reader that they know something imminent is about to happen. Mm-hmm. So that, but I really lucked into that. I was falling in love so much with all of these characters, and I was switching around to point of view. I'm like, well, let's, you know, Alfredo in the very first chapter beats up this kid. And I was like, well, I wonder what that kid's been doing for the last 20 years. And so, or last 16 years, he's only 16. And so then I had 40 pages on that kid. And it was like, all of a sudden I had 300 pages and I'd only gotten 48 hours by. And I was like, well, maybe this is the structure of the book.
That's the way you're going
right.
to go.
Yeah, right.
You talked a little bit about Alfredo's neuroses and how they were like yours. What are his neuroses about? And I guess that's our way of finding out what your neuroses are about too, but.
It's like, I'm thinking of that Marlon Brando movie. He's like, what are you rebelling against? What do you got? Alfredo's neuroses are, what do you got? You know, pretty much anything. The book opens with this filing cabinet in his brain, which is literally there. And he's got this intracranial research librarian who monitors this filing cabinet. And some of the things in there are, he's got a folder, why didn't I wear a condom folder? He's got the... I can't believe I left that Mets game early folder when they came back to win. But I mean, the bulk of his neuroses, he wants very badly to be a good person. And he's afraid that he might not be as good a person as he wants to be. And he wants to, it is a love story, as the title indicates, and he wants to do right by Isabel, his girlfriend. And he mm-hmm. loves her. His love for her is frightening to him because it's so powerful and so profound. Mm-hmm. And, with something like that hanging over his head, you know, he's afraid to lose it.
Mm-hmm. And he's, I guess the big event that kind of kicks this book off is that his brother is about to be released from prison.
Yeah.
And which sets up the title of the book, Dogfight. Can you explain a little bit what dogfight means in this in the context of this novel?
It's literally a dogfight. Yeah, right. When I went to grad school, I got my MFA, and when I told people the title of the book, Dogfight, a Love Story, they're like, that's a metaphor, right? I'm like, no, there's dogs fighting. But it's, well, I don't want to make it sound too gruesome. It's not that gruesome, but, well, dogfighting is obviously gruesome, but it's not like that in the book. He's returning. Tariq is Alfredo's older brother's name, and he's returning home from prison. And Alfredo, who is a likable guy, but not the greatest of drug dealers, or not constituted to be in this sort of line of work, he thinks that it would impress his brother if he threw as a welcome home party this kind of dogfight with a pit bull against a German Shepherd. And so this is sort of, the book is building towards whether or not that's going to happen. The problem is that Alfredo doesn't own a dog, which seems to have occurred to him late.
Late in
the planning process. So when the book opens, they're still looking for a dog, and Tariq comes home tomorrow. And the dogfight is, you know, that same Saturday night.
I'm Andy Borowitz in for Leonard Lopate, and I'm talking to Matt Burgess, who's the author of Dogfight, a Love Story. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. Now, you spent 3 years writing this
yep.
book called Dogfight.
Yep.
So I've got to presume, I'm just trying to figure out the timeline. At some point in the writing process, the whole Michael Vick thing came down.
Yeah.
And did you at that point think of, duck fight? Is there something else I can, did that concern you at all, that this might sort of cast a pall on the title Dogfight?
Well, I thought maybe we could get him to blurb it. Yeah. Yeah, well, when that happened.
And he's back.
Yeah,
Vic
is back,
man.
Yeah, right. For the Eagles. It's like, yeah, my arch nemesis now. Yeah, when that happened, my head just hit the desk that I was working on. I was just like, come on, you know? Not that dogfighting didn't already have a pall cast upon it, but I thought that some 27-year-old writer would write this book faster than I could now, you know? that it was just out there, and it was just, you don't want to be writing a book and then something happens in the world that, you know, I didn't want people to think that I was ripping off, that I got the idea from Michael Vick.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, now there's another, you know, we're talking about sports. There is a big sports element in this book because the Mets, I would say, are a character in this book. I thought the Mets,
Are you a Mets fan?
I'm not. But
you're not a Yankees fan, though.
You know, I am from Cleveland, also the center of the country. So I'm a Cleveland Indians fan, which is to say, I guess I'm an existentialist. I guess that's the way I would have to cast my particular. I'm sort of like a French. Right. I'm like Camus.
Right. I didn't know you were so tough. Yeah.
Exactly. Right, oh, man. It's been bad. And,
just for the last century, though.
Just for the last century. Yeah. I've actually had the – and then, you know, we had that double indignity of seeing – LeBron James spent
an
hour. It wasn't good. It wasn't well received at home. No. But the Mets are throughout this book giving the book a sense of impending doom.
Yeah,
I guess you could
typically.
I guess you could say.
Yeah.
But were you a big? Are you still a Mets fan? Are you?
Of course, I'm still a Mets
fan. Of course.
Yeah. Right. I mean, why? Just because they're terrible?
No. Well, look, you're preaching to the choir here. Right. No one's worse than the Indians.
But it builds character.
It builds character. But how did you decide? Well, they're just going to be the Mets are going to be in this book because that's part of you know growing up in Queens, or was this just more of an expression of your personality?
I wish it was that well planned. Like, because what's happening in the book is it's that weekend where Roger Clemens, the Yankees pitcher, and that's another big thing that's hit the news recently, that everyone found out that he's an official villain. And it's when he's coming to Shea Stadium, and the big discussion is whether or not he'll get beaned for having previously beaned Mike Piazza, the Mets superstar.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was this big bloodlust in Queens to destroy Roger Clemens. And I lucked into that subplot because early on in the writing, I had written a line of dialogue that the father wants this sort of like disgusting sexual present for Father's Day. And I was amused by that. And so I went back and looked up. I was reading like Time Magazine, Newsweek to research that particular weekend. And it was the same weekend as that Mets-Yankee series. And I was like, oh, man, this will be a perfect metaphor for the book.
Well, that was a very – so this is a – I guess I should point out that this is a post, you know, post 9/11 book. It's happening shortly afterwards. Now that
– the summer after, yeah.
Yeah, as a writer, you know, you're also competing with a lot of, you know, just a flood of novels that have tried to capture that moment and the moment afterwards in New York and in America. Did that worry you, or did you just sort of go into with an abandon and say, well, I'm going to tell my story and I'm not going to worry about everybody else who's tried to tackle this?
I wasn't too worried. I mean, at the very least, an interesting summer, you know, and there was a lot of things going on. One of the things that I was writing against was this idea that and I read this again and again in the New York Times, was this idea that after September 11th, like racial discord disappeared in New York, like it was just one big happy family.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, where? You know?
Right.
And so that was something I was interested in exploring. And I thought that there have been plenty post 9/11 novels, but not one in Queens, maybe.
Right.
Maybe there have been. I don't know. But
right.
I was interested. Well, there's another side to the story. I felt that I could write a book that occupies that.
Well, now Islam plays a role in the story too, because Alfredo's brother has a conversion to Islam, changes his name to
while incarcerated. Yeah,
changes his name to Tariq.
Yeah.
What was your thought there? What were you trying to explore with that choice?
I don't know. I mean, Alfredo is himself very Catholic without being a practicing Catholic, in the sense that when he passes a church, he makes the sign of the cross, but he doesn't go to Mass. You know, he feels guilty quite frequently, which seems typical. As a Catholic, I'm allowed to
say that.
You
can relate
to
that, yeah.
Right, and it's sort of like he has this relationship with God where you leave me alone, I'll leave you alone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I won't try to actively do anything to offend you, and you don't smite me, if that's okay. And that was a Catholicism that is internalized in me. And I was – and as – Tariq being the foil of Alfredo, I thought, well, what are the ways in which he could be different? And that was one of them. He would have a different name. He would have a different religion. He looks physically very different than Alfredo. And I was interested in the ways in which those two sort of belief systems might bump up against each other.
Now, growing up in Queens, you sound like you had a great bunch of guys, and you guys had a lot of fun and still do when you're there.
Yep.
Which doesn't really seem compatible with the lifestyle of a novelist.
That's why I had to leave.
That's why you had to leave. Right. When you were a kid, did you know that you wanted to be a writer? Were you always writing things? Were you a storyteller around the neighborhood? What was your what were you into as a kid?
Well, I wanted to be the center fielder for the Mets. You know, when I was a kid.
I think that position's still available. Yeah. Actually,
I hope
it
is.
I don't know what you got planned, but
I don't think I ever thought when I grew up I want to be a writer, but I am from a family and a community of – I wasn't the storyteller because everyone was – were storytellers, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was just an exciting, exciting place to live and with all my friends, and we just hung out. And it was just one thing after another, and the stories didn't necessarily have to be true. And I was – you know, when I got old enough to have to choose a career – I said, well, I like this. I'm a narrative junkie. Mm-hmm. This might be a good thing
and
to
so
go into.
And so you went for the fiction MFA program. You did that whole the whole ride. Who did you study with?
I studied with unbelievable teachers. I studied with Charlie Baxter and Julie Schumacher specifically. I studied with one teacher whose name will go unmentioned, who on my very first manuscript said, ugh, cliche. If I wasn't paid to finish reading this, I would stop right here. And I was like, oh my God, you know, this is going to be rough. But no, they were great, and they were really good at making me. I came into school, someone who liked telling stories, and they got me into seeing the world more closely on a language level. And it's a much more exciting way to write, to sort of take your time and slow down and defamiliarize the world to your readers. And it's actually a much more exciting way to live too. Like I now, my eyes are more opened to things than I otherwise might have been.
Well, I want to say congratulations. It's a great book. You're off to a great start.
Thank
I
you.
Hope the Mets will be inspired by your example. And
yeah, and if they're not, that's okay.
That's okay
yeah,
too.
Right,
it's mainly what's good for Matt. That's what's important.
Yeah, right.
Thanks so much for hanging out with us.
Thank you.
It was really fun. I've been talking to Matt Burgess. His debut novel, Dogfight, A Love Story, is published by Doubleday. He'll be reading and signing books this Wednesday at 7 p.m. at the Barnes & Noble on 86th Street. For location and ticket details, you can head to our show page at wnyc.org. Matt, thanks once again.
Thanks a lot.